Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
We're running a little short on time, so I'm going to run questions as quickly as possible, picking up a few questions from the audience. So please get your questions together. I'm going to start with Sanjeev first, actually, to see whether he's got particular reflections, then a few questions from the audience, and then, as I said, we're going to see quickly some presentations from two of the unsuccessful groups applying for funding. So start with you, Sanjeev. A wide-ranging spectrum of, yes. of tools and, yes. and perspectives and design.
Thank you very much. I thought they were fantastic and really very interesting to see these practical, clear processes and tools that we could potentially use in general practice to try and improve the customer stroke patient experience. I'm for me, the challenge, I think, is as a practicing GP to get to the place where actually I want to and feel enabled and empowered to be able to use those tools, because I think they're really critical. And actually, I think we're in the environment where we can start thinking to do that. So I think this is a very positive set of ideas to be taking away and working with. And we need to be able to disseminate these ideas, because they are actually in themselves very powerful. I'm also quite I was thinking a lot about the idea of connecting people who are looking to make change happen with people who know how to make change happen. And those conversations are iterative and they're circular and actually can make a huge difference, I think, to improving the ability and the capacity to make change happen in general practice.
I think that's such a great point, because I think fundamentally, as much as we're looking here at patient journeys, ultimately the question is, what is the journey of the innovator? So how do we become convinced that we need to change? Well, to what extent are we being the undercover boss and getting out there and truly understanding what's going on? And then in terms of hurdles, to what extent are we trying stuff out and ultimately getting to success, or are we hitting brick walls of innovation that stop us because we feel burnt by it? But as you say at the end, but how can we create a community of practice that provides us the practical as well as the emotional support necessary to be the innovator? Because it's not an easy thing to do at all. No, so some great observations there. Thank you. Should we start to take some questions from the audience? We'll take maybe two or three at once, if that's possible, and then we'll get some response. So I think we've got one at the front here. Thank you.
I just want to make one point. So the slides will be online, and then we went to the Jim Stewart Association website, and the presentation will also be online on TV. We'll send out those details. So the whole thing is captured.
Thanks, David. That's great. So, yeah, if you could sort of say who you are and a short question, and we'll take sort of two or three of them. Thank you.
Okay, that's the challenge. Just a short question. I was going to make a comment. My name is Jack Tar Singh. I'm a non-exec director with Luton Dunstable Hospital, but I'm here as the vice chairman of the BME National Forum from the NHS Confed. But the comments I was going to make was, a couple of weeks ago I was invited to a conference where Desmond Tutu spoke, and he really reiterated the two comments about mind gone. What he was trying to say was, some of the solutions that we have to great changes are simple. You don't need great people, you don't need large amounts of money. A smile will do the same job. Listening to somebody rather than talking over them will do the same job. A hello will do the same job. So I was really impressed with this research work around Weight Watchers. Again, simple solution. And then the health inequalities of identifying groups that we're missing out. So Weight Watchers, a commercial company, are missing a great opportunity to make money by not respecting diversity and not respecting the people that they are missing out on. So that's the point I'd like to make, is that we need to identify the health inequalities, we need to target the individuals, and that's where we're going to make the savings in the NHS, because more and more money is not going to be thrown at us. If we're going to make savings, we need to target the prevention measures, which is what you were doing with Holt. Thank you.
Very much. Should we just take a few more comments or questions? One over here and then one on the left.
Thanks. Neil Blatchell at Town Planner. First of all, wondered whether I'm right in assuming that Colm wouldn't get a job with Corridor. I'll leave that with you. I wonder if the panel would like to reflect on what the drivers might be for GPs in introducing these innovations. Yeah. I mean, we know why a petrol company, a selling company, would put the investment and the time into it to improve market share and profit. What about GPs? What we're looking for as a driver for this company?
Great. I think to revisit one. Thank you very much. And a question or comment from over here.
Hi there, Steve Hill from McKinsey. I have two questions, if I may. The first is, I'd love to hear how you tackle powerful stories that already exist that tell myths that get in the way of change, because that's a problem I see pervasive in the NHS. And the second one is, the NHS has a rather sorry history of what I call the Kevin the Teenager approach to implementing ideas, which is it's reluctant to implement the idea. It has a go in a really half-baked way, then shrugs its shoulders and says, see, I told you it was a rubbish idea in the first place. So what I would like to know is there a method that the NHS can use for prototyping that helps it make better go, no-go decisions and decide, OK, this idea genuinely won't work?
Fantastic. Well, let's take those for now. I think some really good things both about what are the drivers to get going in the first place, but to maintain and that drive and essentially to make those better go-no-go decisions, to weed out the bad ones so we can focus the resources on the good ones. And also something also about storytelling for good and for bad. How do we not have stories that are myths, but as stories that are founded on evidence, something like that. So
Can I come back with the driver's point? And I think there's a really simple, for me, there's a really simple answer to that, at least in one dimension. Of course, there's many motivations that anyone might come out to answer that question. But I think if you find yourself moaning about the same thing again and again and again and it never goes away and you're getting more and more frustrated over the years that the problem is never solved, then that is all you need to get you started.
I could make some comments about this. I think as a GP, there are several different motivations for looking for change to take place within my practice. Some of them are the realisation that we're in a very difficult economic and financial climate. Second, the realisation that actually as a GP, my population, I haven't looked after perhaps some of the groups that probably deserve better care, and that acknowledgement is coming to the forefront of my mind. The acknowledgement actually that competition and all sorts of other drivers are out there that actually have an impact upon the way I work and the way my practice serves the local population. So there are a variety of different drivers that are pushing us to think a lot about how we start looking at the service that we offer and how we could improve them. But ultimately it's about, I want to do a better job actually. I actually want to make a difference, and I also want to be able to ensure that my local health economy is able to look after my children and look after my family in the way that I would want to be looked after. So there's something about taking personal responsibility and being freed from remembering that actually the people that we're here to serve are our patients, not the government or anything else. Mm-hmm. And actually it's bearing that in mind as well that matters.
Continue with that or talk about the myths?
Yeah, I was
going to
try and
stories.
Answer. Yeah, I think any, Steve, any, obviously brand is obviously after always putting out there the best stories about them. Every brand or community has negative stories or negative sentiment. We're seeing a lot more of that now, obviously with social media, digital media, and the best brands or the best communities step up to that and begin to answer all of that negative sentiment quite quickly, and also invite those people to come forward. I think we, as part of the Design Council, the NHS Whittington one in particular, we actually had a patient that had quite a few angry stories to tell about the NHS, and we actually invited that lady to come and be part of the design process, and actually she has now become a great ambassador for NHS Whittington. So I think that's a great example. I think of stepping up, controlling the story, to be honest. It's down to us to make sure there are great stories, but to control it and not be afraid to invite people forward and enter into a dialogue.
That's great. I think Sanjeev just wanted to respond, and then we'll have to move on to the next bit.
Just a very quick thing about doing innovation in the NHS. We live in an environment where, I think if anyone knows the Carnifin Network, they talk about fail-safe systems. we work in an environment where failing is not acceptable, and that actually safety trumps all. And we've got to move from a fail-safe environment to a safe-fail environment, where actually testing, allowing tolerable failure to take place, and then allowing systems and clinicians to get on from that and actually get back into the game of continuing to test new ideas is actually really, really important. And actually, we don't move from a fail-safe to a safe-fail environment, we're not going to, I think, and that's why myths happen, because they become the sort of totem pole against which fail-safe systems are built. And I think that's a great barrier.
I just want to pick up on Phil's point about the conversation with the patient at NHS Whittington and link it to your point, Steve, about Kevin the teenager. I think to get to any point of doing something new or having action, or in a commercial environment, a transaction, you sort of start with conversations and then you develop relationships and then you get to the action or the transaction. And being prepared to, and sometimes this is something that not all designers necessarily have it, and it doesn't have to be something that is the preserve of designers, but a degree of empathy. I mean, you know, this environment, you've got fantastic empathy with your individuals, your patients and so on. So being prepared to engage with tricky conversations, and rather than avoiding tricky customers, like Kevin the teenager or whoever, engage in that conversation, because there'll be value in the conversation in and of itself that will lead to, you know, maybe a little nudge here and a little nudge there.
Fantastic, thank you. Unfortunately, I really have to move us on. Now, one of the things you'll notice is that we started 20 minutes after when we were supposed to start. So we are a bit pushed for time.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.